We know agricultural educators.
And we know that the job is hard work.
Here to make your job easy is Owl Pellets, where we are regurgitating information just for you.
Hey, Owl Pellets, this is Brian, Kate, and Marshall. We are great to be back here by the Owl Pellet. Today we have with us Don Edgar from University of Arkansas. Don, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
All right, guys. So we have some great conversation here planned with Don to talk about the things that you do every single day and kind of thinking about what we do. So Don, kind of give us a brief overview of what we're going to be talking about today.
Well, during my teaching career, I really wanted to know, you know, how students grasp meaning from what we were teaching them. And so I started doing some investigations into, you know, how learning has changed from basically when its inception all the way up until today. So I really wanted to look at, you know, how those students grasp knowledge, how they internalized it, and then how they could then, you know, showcase that knowledge to students.
So what did you find? Has it changed over time?
Absolutely. It's very interesting as you look at how learning has really changed through the eons. If you go back to even Plato and Aristotle really had different views on how learning occurred, whether they internalized it through reasoning in their mind, maybe even to that knowledge that it just came from the environment. Because we need to understand, if we look back at how learning occurred or how learners were looked at, you know, learning was thought to be a gift from God. Only those who were really enlightened, only those people who were affluent because they were given those gifts from God, were allowed to learn about anything. But it was really basic learning. And so they really looked at, you know, things that were important to them at that time, Latin and religion. But as we moved, you know, up into World War I era and World War II era, if we look at America, we started thinking that, hey, these people can maybe internalize stuff. People can maybe need to do something more than just spit back facts to us. And then as we got into what's really kind of kicked it off is Sputnik and the space race, we knew that our students really needed to know more concepts that we weren't teaching them. Things about math, things about science, things about reasoning. And so it's always interesting as we look at that in our perspective as ag educators that, you know, our motto has always been learning to do, doing to learn. But that's really that change that has occurred, because learning to do really was always, that doing to learn never really came into inception until probably the 1950s.
Yeah, I always tell folks, if you ever get a chance to Google and to watch and listen to some of those TV and radio reports when Sputnik was going off and just how big of a deal that really was and the panic that it caused to do that. So Don, you gave us a great overview there and kind of talked about the history of things. Why do you think we did some of this move? Why do you think we moved from, as you said, recitation literacy to extraction literacy? What caused all that?
One of the things that as we look back and how teaching and learning has really occurred, we are pretty predominantly, we take psychological theories in education maybe a decade, two decades later, and then we look at them and try to apply them in the classroom. And as if we think back to that time, B.F. Skinner and others are really looking at, you know, how things occurred. You know, if we ring a bell, will a dog salivate? If we give something a stimulus, what kind of response will occur through that? And so I think we really looked at, you know, our students and said, hey, we can expect more out of them. We can allow them to think on their own. And it's been a slow process, but it is a process that continually evolves even today.
So I see this a lot in class, Don, and I want to get your thoughts on it, kind of based off of what you said. Our students, right, it takes a little time for us to help them learn how to learn sometimes, because they might expect, if you're, you know, talking about that behavioral conditioning, I've seen students a lot, and especially when I was teaching high school, that they expect if they say, I don't know, long enough, that the teacher will give them the answer. You know, and that's come to them from teachers doing that to them for years, where they keep saying, well, I don't know. And the teacher says, well, yeah, here it is, right here, right? Right? And the student says, yeah, right, great. I didn't have to do the work now. So how do we, or do you have any tips for how teachers might get back, or what has been done over time Any tips for teachers on how to get students back on track on focusing on that learning how to learn as opposed to that I'm going to sit here, make sure I have the right answer because you're going to give me the right answer?
That's a great question, and I don't know if I have the answers, but I do know that I think if in teaching as it evolves and as we train teachers and as we are teachers and we train ourselves and change what we're doing, I think if we think about, you know, the FFA, that three circle model, if we think about the model, there's a book called How We Learn, and it really talks about, you know, your teaching really needs to be student-centered, your teaching needs to be knowledge-centered, your teaching needs to be assessment-centered. And so if we think about those as being those three circles, if we really understand our students, if we get to know them, which really wasn't done previously, we understand how they can internalize and learn knowledge based off of their experiences. And as teachers, you know, we have to be knowledge-centered. We don't have to be experts, but we do need to know at least the basic premise of what we're teaching them. And then the big key, and you know, students hate this, but that assessment-centered piece, if we don't evaluate students, we don't know where they're at, and they don't know really where they're at. And that allows us to really come back to them and say, you know, hey, I noticed that we really didn't learn about this section or this part of what I taught y'all last week. And so we really need to come back to that. And I think students really internalize that. I've never seen a student who doesn't want to learn. They may not like it, but they do want to learn, and they want to be successful in what they do. And one thing I left off of that, and it's the same thing as FFA, is we really cannot forget about that community that they're involved in, because that gives them that experience, that tie to something they know. And in Arkansas, we have a really easy way to do this. In Northwest Arkansas, we're up there in the trees. But if I talk about rice production or soybean production, they don't get that. But if I talk about it towards trees, they understand that.
Well, and, you know, if I look at, you know, I think about our program, and if I'm an ag educator, you know, there's a lot of students that come to us that are, you know, excited about the content. But I think, in my opinion, being a principal and then a professor and a teacher, kiddos come in and they seem to just turn their brain into the rhythm of public education has really gotten in the way of their ability to come in and say, I'm interested in things and I'm coming to get information about it. I think breaking that rhythm is really tough, and in ag education, I think we kind of do that. But looking back at, you know, Rufus Stimson and the home projects, my dad even, for example, he came to school, and he specifically came to ag to fix the issue on his farm that he was having. And so the motivation came intrinsically. But now, with so many kiddos not being in agriculture, and with agricultural education being an elective, and it's very leadership-based, and some of that transition, or even agri-science, and kids aren't coming from a farm, what would be your advice for ag teachers to still help break that cycle of just come and sit and get?
Well, that, I think we all fight with that one. I don't know, again, I don't know if I have the answer to that, but I think what we do is never in, before in time, I think, do we have students who are as self-directed as they are. I think our students have abilities that, you know, when I was in school or when I was teaching high school, you know, the students didn't come in and say and could do a lot of things, do their own investigation. It wasn't a part of their life. But today, our students are. They have very investigative minds. And unfortunately, for a lot of us teachers who may be a little bit older, I mean, it's more easier for the younger ones to say, you know, let's get them involved in this. Let's get them excited about that. You know, if our goal is for them to be engaged in that education to be meaningful, we really have to figure out how to get them engaged in that. And, you know, it sounds silly, but if we learn them, if we understand how they do that, they will get engaged. We've, you know, Dr. Shoulders and I were visiting student teachers, and we did this together this year. And you know, astounding to me, because I'm an old guy. I mean, you can tell that. But, you know, in 14 years of teaching in high school, I never used Quizlet. But I have seen our student teachers use Quizlet and really engage those students in that lesson. And I never would have used that. But I think some of those things, some of those apps, some of those things that they use each and every day is something we just have to integrate into how we do it. I don't think we can overdo it. That's the problem. And I think a lot of teachers do that. They find something that works and they just stay with that. I think we just have to be fluid. We have to be movable and try new things, even when it's difficult for us to do that.
Well, I think that's a great point. Just when we were recording this here in the spring, and I would just spent most of the last couple of weeks out doing student teacher visits like a lot of us do, and you sit there and you talk with student teachers and other teachers, you know, they're focused on the content. How do I, number one, trying to learn the content, how to present the content. But they're starting to, you know, the really good student teachers and the really good teachers, they have that idea of building that environment for those students so they know how they're going to be doing, you know, this is how we operate here. This is a challenge that we're going to be doing. And so, Don, what tips or things that you have seen? You mentioned a couple things here for teachers, when to focus on building that classroom environment and things, you know, things that they should be doing to help create that culture and that environment they want in their classroom to meet those learning goals.
Number one thing is don't listen to everybody else. Don't try to be me, and don't try to be, you know, Dr. Childers, don't try to be Dr. Baker. You know, find what fits your rhythm, find what fits your style, because you can't fake teaching. You have to be excited about it. You know, and if you're really good at doing labs work, you know, whether they be science or they be mechanical, you know, find how to integrate that teaching style for your students if they like that. And now, if the students don't enjoy learning in that style, we're going to have to change something. You know, you never know where what your style is going to be from one day to the next. I hate to go on an example, but I happen to use them quite often. My first two classes when I first started teaching 25 years ago was floral design. Well, I didn't have any background in floral design, but I really, you know, asked those students, what do you want to learn about? How do you want to learn this? And figured out how to teach that. And I learned more that semester about floral design. I don't build corsages today, but I could then. And the students really learned, and the students enjoyed it. Now, I know what an asymmetrical design and a symmetrical design, but before that, I knew nothing about that. And so I think we have to be, okay. It's okay to fail, and it's okay to be different than other people, because we have to design that classroom and that environment what fits us. But again, it has to fit those students. It can't just be our view of the world. It needs to fit them.
Well, I want to hit on one thing as we wrap up this great conversation, something you hit there. You said it's okay to fail. And I think that's a big piece of this culture and this learning environment to create that space where students feel and know that it's okay to fail, and letting our student teachers and our practicing teachers know it's okay to fail. Not everything you're going to do is going to work every single time, but don't quit trying. And I think that's really, really important. You know, one thing I heard somebody tell me one time is we want to create an environment where our students sometimes fail and fail spectacularly so that they're trying these kind of things to happen. So how do we build that environment, you know, to create that space where teachers are willing to try new things and the students come in and they're not always concerned about just getting the right answer. They're willing to try new things and to have something not turn out just right.
I kind of akin that a little bit to, I use an example and I tell my students that, you know, Thomas Edison, I can't remember the amount of times he failed on building many of his inventions, but they were in the thousands. But he kept coming back. And, you know, if we moved into technology, it was really said that, you know, computers would replace teachers. And so, and that was just the predominant view that, you know, we would no longer need teachers. But I remind my students that we need teachers because you feel, you understand, you care. And so, and the reason that that's important is because teaching is an art. And never do you ever get everything right the first time. And so the canvas may be ugly, but something's going to be nice in there and something's going to be seen in there that people will enjoy. And so, and you're going to find your style of whatever that is. And so, you know, it's okay to fail. You're young. I still fail. I've been doing this for 25 years. And some days I don't do the best at getting that information to the students. But you know what? I think back on it. I really reflect. I see how, you know, they react to that information. I look how they do on my tests. And then I try again. And try a different tangent or a different way to present that information. And I'm okay. I tell them, you know, y'all didn't get this. This was my fault. Let's see what I did wrong, and let's see how we can get that and move forward from that.
Okay. You know, Don, as you're talking about that, I was thinking about the student side of that. When students are wrong, and how, again, they're kind of conditioned to be embarrassed about giving a wrong answer. So this year I started doing something a little bit different, again, to get back to that idea that wrong answers are good too. We talk about the difference between, you know, you'll always think that everything with four legs and a tail is a dog until you get one wrong and see that it's a cat, and then you can tell the difference between them. But if you never saw something that was wrong and put that out there as wrong, you would continue to think that they were all dogs. So we talk about that, and then I started asking students, you know, I asked them for a right answer, and if no one raises their hand, then I started saying, okay, I want you to give me an awesome wrong answer. And they're like thrilled because they have a bunch of answers they think are wrong, and they're wanting to share them, and then we can discern between the right and the wrong. And that came from reflecting on my own teaching and saying, gosh, like I don't know what they're thinking, because they're not sharing because they're so scared about being wrong. So then asking them to give the wrong answers really switched that and started to shift that culture in the classroom like you're talking about.
I think that's great. That culture is so important. And I know it's a timely topic for me. Like I said, we've been spending time out in the different high schools and middle schools here in Florida seeing this and seeing the difference the culture can make, even as I step in other classrooms outside of agriculture. Don, we really appreciate you coming and spending time with us today to talk about this idea, because you know, we often say there's something different about ag education from the rest of the school. There's something different that's going on down there, and I think it's this culture is a very important part of that. And so thank you for leading us in this discussion. Any parting thoughts for us?
All I have to say is, and I say this to our students all the time, you know, keep working hard, keep trying. Ag education is probably one of the most fulfilling professions there are. And I think it does go to that culture that we build those relationships with those students because we know them. And we try to impart, you know, what little we know to them and hope that they just take it way further than we ever could. We've got great students. We have a great calling. Glad to be a part of it. And I hope any of this may help others who are doing this job.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Don Edgar, University of Arkansas, we thank you so much for being with us today here on Owl Pellets. We appreciate all of you listening to us today. Hopefully you're able to find a couple of nuggets in here that you can apply as well as you go back and work with those students. And as Don said, it's a great job. It's a great opportunity to work with students, and we really appreciate all that you do. We hope that you like this podcast, that you write a review for us on iTunes, and you follow us on Facebook. And so for Kate and Marshall, this is Brian Myers by the Owl Pellet. Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
We know agricultural educators.
And we know that the job is hard work.
Here to make your job easy is Owl Pellets, where we are regurgitating information just for you.